So I think it looks like we've got the total of three commissioners. So I'm going to call this meeting to order today on May 2nd. So the first item of business is approving the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make that motion.
I second.
Been moved and seconded. Any debate, friendly amendments? See none. All those in favor of approving the minutes say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, John.
Aye, Josh. Aye, Josh.
Okay. The minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda is our loan portfolio today, where there are seven loans at a little over $3.6 million. Is there a motion to approve the loans?
I so move.
And I will second.
Great. And so I'm going to turn it over, though, to Rich to let us to talk us through what we are looking at today.
Thanks, Sarah. You know, we have a number of bread and butter loans, including vehicle purchases and road work. But we also have a few that are a little bit more unusual. The Blackhawk School District. We don't get a lot of loans from school districts, just because generally they issue debt in large amounts for large building projects, and they're tax exempt. And so when they do go to market, they can generally achieve interest rates that are lower than the State Trust Fund Loan Program offers. In this instance, the Blackhawk School District is tearing down an older section of their building that was built in 1921, and they are constructing new classrooms and offices with the funding. The other one I would like to mention is the Village of Osceola, which is demolishing a building that had been condemned. It is now on village property. It was an old milk house that was acquired to provide, I believe, river access for the village. And that's all I have for today. Are there any questions on these loans?
Thanks, Rich. John and Josh, any questions about any of the loans?
No questions.
No, I'm just... It's nice to know how much a garbage truck costs.
All right. Well, seeing there's no questions, all those in favor of approving the loan portfolio today say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, John.
Aye, Josh. Aye, Josh.
The loans for today are approved. So we have no old business, but we do have a lot under new business. So if there's no objection by the commissioners, I'm going to suspend the rules. And I think what we can do is have Tom and the team walk us through one by one, and we can do a vote after he explains each of them. But I just think it'll make it easier as we kind of go through this in maybe a bit more of a seamless way. Is there any objections from commissioners on that? Okay. Nope. Great. See none. Tom, I will turn it over to you to talk about new business item number 5.
Thanks, Sarah. The first thing you may notice is the transaction number on this one is old, S1705. Well, we're in right now fiscal 23. There are times that we start working on a transaction and we get an appraisal. And the staff in this case looked at it and said, you know, that appraisal doesn't seem quite right. It's not taking into account the true value of the timber that's still standing on the property. So the staff decided to go and hold a timber sale, thin the property very carefully, and then came back to sell the property with it already thinned. And it's amazing how much more value came out of that property by doing it in two phases like that, because of the fact that the value of the timber was significant. And I know, Sarah, you're going to ask me how much it was, and I don't recall off the top of my head, but I can look it up for any of the commissioners that may so choose. But the fact is, by doing it that way, we were able to generate quite a bit more money for the trust funds by doing it. So property is way out in the western part, way outside of our consolidation zone. The thing that all three of these properties have in common is that they're relatively isolated and not currently productive. This one is not currently productive because we just had a timber sale. So,
any questions for Tom about this particular land sale?
So, I have a question. So, if it doesn't have any access, how big is the potential, you know, realm of buyers for this?
Generally, in a situation like this, John, the biggest source of buyers are the adjacent landowners. When one person owns all the property all the way around it, yeah, it's a pretty limited pool. But it's amazing how oftentimes when there are several surrounding landowners, that there's a significant amount of interest because they've all viewed it as kind of their own personal private park for a while. And now the idea that, oh, their private park may be someone else's private park brings out more interest. So, but you are absolutely correct that it is a more limited pool. You're not going to have someone from Chicago going, hey, I think I'll buy that 40 acres and that has no public access.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Tom.
Welcome.
So I think if there's no other questions, we should probably just vote on this. So is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Great. I'll second.
So it's been moved and seconded to approve the proposed land bank sale in Withrow as stated in the packet. Any other discussion? All right, see none. All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, John.
Aye, Josh.
The first land sale is approved. Moving on to the second item, and then again, Tom, we'll reserve the floor to you to kind of walk us through this land sale.
Thanks, Sarah. I've actually gotten to see this parcel myself on Steve Javankowski Road. This is a situation where, again, not really productive land. There's wetland. There's the trees that are there are relatively don't have as much value as you would hope for in a northern hardwood forest. And so this is one that we were looking at selling to the public because of the fact that, unlike the last one, we think there would be more buyers interested because of the fact that it does have frontage on a public road there. We do have a couple other parcels that are nearby, in fact, directly across the road. But those other parcels, are able to string together to create a larger block over there. And we would probably look at some point in terms of selling all of those as a block together, but not at this time yet. But the appraisal came back in decent shape. Public access, even though it's in our consolidation zone, it's one that's not currently producing a stream of revenue for the trust funds and therefore appropriate for sale.
Any questions for Tom about this land sale? All right. See none. Is there a motion?
I shall move.
I'll make the motion. Oh, I'll second then.
All right. It's been moved and seconded to approve the proposed land bank sale to the public on Yellow River. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, John.
Aye, Josh.
The land bank sale in Yellow River is approved. So then the next item on the agenda is the sale of the, we just did the Jernikowski Road. I apologize. Yes. So now we're doing the Yellow River.
Yes.
So
number seven. Sure,
yes, right. Let's do number seven. Please make sure the record accurately reflects number six, and now we're doing number seven. So Tom, walk us through Yellow River.
Thank you. This one, again, isolated parcel outside our consolidation zone. The one thing that's a little bit unique about this one is that there is a water feature that runs through it. But because it does not have public access, it's difficult to manage and difficult to generate any revenue from as well. So, but it appears that some of the neighboring landowners are interested in acquiring it. So again, this is one that's appropriate for sale because of the fact that it's not generating any revenue for the trust funds at this point, and we don't see it being able to do so in the immediate future either.
Seems pretty straightforward. Any questions for Tom? Seeing none, I move that we approve the proposed land bank sale to the public on Yellow River. Is there a second?
I will second that.
Great. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving this land sale, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, John.
Aye, Josh.
Land sale is approved. Moving on to the final item under new business, which is the conservation easement. So Tom, why don't you walk us through this one?
An unusual way of making money. Most of the time during our board meetings, we're talking about how we're investing our liquid assets, what kind of stocks and bonds and ETFs and private mutual funds we're investing in. Or we're talking about how we're buying or selling land. But in those cases, we're really talking about the surface land. Starting in 1909, there's been a statute in place in Wisconsin that required the reservation of certain rights on the sale of public lands. And public lands were, in essence, defined as the lands that BCPL was managing. And so we actually, over the years, now have about 200,000 acres of reserved mineral estate that for the most part generates zero income or zero revenue for the trust funds. But the fact is, under the statutes, we do have the power to grant to sell easements for full and fair value. And there's also a statute, chapter 700, that talks about conservation easements and how those are done. And if you put the two together, well, BCPL has the power to sell a conservation easement. Most of the time you're thinking about selling a conservation easement on the surface land, but you can also sell it on the mineral estate. And so these days, where there are people that are looking at setting up wetland mitigation banks, in order to effectively do that, you either have to own the mineral estate to enter that conservation easement, or find the owner of that severed mineral estate and have them join in the conservation easement. And that's precisely what's happening here, where the owner of the surface land was looking at setting up a wetland mitigation bank, was all set to go, and realized, oh, we don't own the mineral estate. And so they approached us. Well, would you be willing to sell that? The statutes don't provide a mechanism for us to sell the mineral estate. Like I said, because of the fact that we can sell a conservation easement, we could join in that conservation easement to the extent that we own that mineral estate and promise not to use those mineral rights. Well, how would you value that? Well, the first thing we do is try to get an assessment in terms of what minerals are there. And so we reached out to the local experts who provided us with opinion that said, well, what you really have there is not really any chance of viable recoverable minerals. But that doesn't mean that the value of granting that conservation easement is zero, because no one on the call today knows what the future is going to look like 30, 40 years from now. And so we turn to the other land commissions in the western part of the United States and say, what do you do in these situations where someone wants to either buy or encumber mineral rights on lands that you don't think you have any minerals on. And the policy throughout most of our Western counterparts is to sell either those rights or encumber them for somewhere between $50 and $100 an acre. And so when we proposed that to the people setting up the Wetland Mitigation Bank, they thought that was a pretty good idea. And so here we are asking our board to consider encumbering our mineral estate in this area in return for the payment of $100 an acre for that. And again, what it's doing is it's using a trust asset to generate revenue that hasn't really been used before. We've done one of these before. So, you know, we're relatively new to this process, but it's worked. It's a little bit more work than I'd like to say, but maybe if we do a few more of them, it'll get more efficient. But like I said, it's taking an unproductive asset and making it productive is about the best way to put it. Sarah, I can tell you've got a furrowed brow. Is there some concern or question?
No, I'm just more like rereading the fine print about it, Tom.
Okay.
Because it's something that we've never done since I've been here, unless I've missed just a meeting.
Just one.
Okay. But it makes sense. So I'm always just rereading it. But Josh or John, do you have any questions for Tom?
I have a question. How much land is it, or how many acres are at issue for this one?
Oh, if I remember, there's several hundred, and I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head.
Okay. That's fine. And I guess the other question was, so the proceeds of this, where do they go? Does this go into the land bank stuff to purchase land or straight into the common school fund or somewhere else?
So it goes into the principal of the fund, but not into the land bank portion of the principal of that fund.
Huh. Okay.
At least that's been our interpretation so far. It's a great question, John, because it's a square peg in a round hole is about the best way to put it.
Because you're selling rights to the land. You're not selling. I mean, it's weird because you separated the rights to.
Exactly. Yeah. And you, the reason why I was inclined to add it to the principal as opposed to put it just in the investable principal as opposed to the land bank portion of it is because the land bank rules talk about us, the amount of land that we're managing cannot exceed what we started with. And so that number was set at 77,845 acres. And all of a sudden, when you start getting into this, well, what are you doing here? Are you, because now you're...
How much land does a mineral right to an acre cost?
Exactly. Yeah. So, and because we have 200,000 acres of mineral estate, it's a very different animal. I don't anticipate selling conservation easements on 200,000 acres, but it would have the ability to significantly change the dynamics on the land banking program.
Okay. Just curious. I was wondering how that all worked.
Thank you for the intelligent and thoughtful question. And I hope my answer was sufficient. So.
No, it makes sense. Thanks, Tom.
Any other questions for Tom? Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded on the conservation easement. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, John.
Aye, Josh.
The conservation easement is approved. So we are now moving into routine business, and Rich is going to share with us the Chief Investment Officer's report.
Thanks, Sarah. This is the meeting that I will be providing a quarterly investment report. So let's get started with that. The board packet today includes two regularly scheduled quarterly reports constructed for the Common School Fund and updated for today's meeting. Let's move right into the first report, which is included on page 29 of your packet. Going across the page, the portfolio report shows the current market value, cost, unrealized gain or loss, percentage gain or loss, yield, and projected annual income for the Common School Fund portfolio by asset class. The report shows that we had a good quarter. Our projected income in the lower right-hand corner increased about $1 million since my last report 3 months ago to just under $64.5 million. This projection assumes that markets remain static over the next year, which is not going to happen. However, the fact that our projection for the next 12 months is well above the record $52 million distribution that we just provided DPI is a really good sign for our beneficiaries going forward. To highlight just how far we've come in the past year, the current projection of annual income is of nearly $16 million, or 30% higher than I reported just 12 months ago. This accomplishment has been driven by two factors. First, our commitments to private debt funds increased by more than $110 million over the past 12 months. These funds provide an average yield significantly higher than the remainder of our portfolio. While private debt investments do assume a higher level of default risk than our historic portfolio of government and bonds and state trust fund loans, our diversification across asset managers and strategies helps to insulate the Common School Fund against future losses. In addition, private debt funds originate floating rate loans, and therefore the value of these funds is more stable than fixed rate debt when market interest rates change. The second reason that our projected annual income continues to rise is the general increase in market interest rates over the past 16 months. The fact is that we receive a higher level of income from recently acquired publicly traded bonds, state trust fund loans originated over the past several months, and assets held at the state investment fund. However, this increase in interest rates is always a double-edged sword. You know, I've been saying for years that the value of our fixed income bond portfolio goes up or down depending on market interest rates. But I think this concept may benefit from a quick illustration. Let's say that you wanted to receive an annual payment of $5,000 for the rest of your life and the lives of your grandchildren. Let's call it perpetuity. If market rates were at 5%, you would need to invest $100,000 to receive this benefit. $100,000 times 5% is equal to $5,000. Now let's assume that market rates go up to 6%. Someone new coming in would no longer be willing to pay $100,000 to receive that $5,000 annual payment. At 6% market rates, that new person would now expect to receive $6,000 per year. So how much would that new person be willing to pay for your original fixed stream of payments at $5,000 each year? The math shows that the new person would need to invest only about $83,000 to receive that $5,000 per year at the new rate. So the market value of your fixed income stream just went down by $17,000. Well, you know, the same concepts hold true for most government and corporate bonds. Most bonds are issued with a fixed payment schedule based on market interest rates at the time of issuance. If rates change during the term of the bond, and they will, the amount and date of future interest payments does not change. However, the value of those future payments does go up or down for anybody willing to buy that fixed schedule of future income. Of course, you know, there are complicating factors in the public bond market, such as bond term and credit quality of the issuer, but the underlying math remains the same. Let's take this example a little bit further. In addition to bonds and other fixed income assets, real estate is another asset class that is beginning to show the impact of higher interest rates. Most purchases of commercial real estate require financing. One impact of higher interest rates is that higher mortgage payments will reduce the amount of future cash flows received from the property. But in addition to that negative impact on cash flow, there's a second impact of higher rates on commercial real estate that is similar to the bond example. Higher interest rates reduce the value of the income you expect to be generated by the property. In the real estate industry, this process is called an increase in the cap or capitalization rate. The recent rise in market interest rates has forced an increase in commercial real estate cap rates over the past year or so. In turn, that increase in cap rates has had an impact on the value of commercial and multifamily properties across the country. Fortunately, these impacts on the Common School Fund bond and real estate portfolios are only paper losses. Changes in the asset value do not reduce the amount of distributable income that will be received. Asset prices are going to recover, and BCPL manages the trust fund assets on the basis of a permanent time horizon. That means that our portfolios are built to withstand short-term fluctuations in asset prices while continuing to distribute an increasing amount of income to our beneficiaries. Our mission at the BCPL is to manage the assets of the school trust funds in a manner that maintains significant, stable, and sustainable distributions to fund beneficiaries. There's no question regarding the significance of our distributions, especially following the growth produced over the last few years. And BCPL staff has an extremely high confidence level regarding the stability and the sustainability of future trust fund distributions. This confidence comes from two sources. First, as illustrated in the far right-hand column of this table, we have constructed a diverse portfolio of assets that produce separate and substantial streams of income, many with low correlations to one another. In fact, we will soon be adding an 11th asset class to this group, as we just closed last week on our first commitment to the infrastructure asset class. Second, our confidence comes from our investment policy that requires us to maintain a smoothing fund with a minimum balance at 50% of the next targeted annual distribution. These smoothing funds are fully funded and are available to supplement future distributions if necessary. So if for any reason financial markets tank in an unforeseen manner and our distributable income suffers over a multi-year period, our beneficiaries will still be covered. Are there any questions before we move on to the next page?
Not for me, thanks, Rich.
Okay, let's move on to the asset allocation report on page 30, which shows how we are doing in regard to our target allocations. This report shows our current market values, outstanding commitments, and investment policy target allocations and ranges. The big picture is that we're getting very close to our target allocations across the board. Let's look first at the potential portfolio in the middle columns, which includes the current market value of each asset class, plus the expected remaining commitments to be funded. There are a few new commitments that have been included in this potential portfolio, including the previously mentioned commitment to the BlackRock Global Infrastructure Fund 4 that closed last week, and Baird Venture Partners 6, which will be closing very soon. I decided to include these two funds in this report for the benefit of full transparency. Both funds have an investment period over which they are expected to call committed capital, so the full impact of these commitments will occur over the longer term. The BlackRock Fund will be making infrastructure investments over the next 5 years and has a full term of 12 to 15 years. The Baird Fund has an investment period of 6 years with a duration of 10 to 13 years. With targeted income in the 6 to 8% range, the Infrastructure Fund will provide an excellent source of distributable income. The fund is somewhat unique in the industry in that BlackRock often acquires off-market assets that are carved from the balance sheets of existing corporate clients. Management of the asset becomes more efficient and profitable when it's repositioned to attract additional customers. One of the reasons we're excited about this investment is that income from infrastructure assets will be uncorrelated with any of the other asset classes we currently hold in the Common School Fund. This diversification helps to further reduce any risk to the amount of future distributable income. In addition to the distributable income, we expect an increase in infrastructure asset values at or above the long-term rate of inflation. Most of these assets are managed using long-term contracts that include annual inflation kickers to the contract rate. This is the fourth infrastructure fund sponsored by BlackRock, and prior funds have averaged an annual 14% return on exit. The commitment to the newest Baird Venture Capital Fund focuses on B2B technology and services in underserved geographic markets, including the Midwest. BCPL invested in the prior Baird Fund, Baird Venture Partners 5, and has been impressed with the Baird Private Markets team over the past several years. Baird Venture Partners has averaged a net annual return of over 20% in prior funds. And as of last year, our investment in BVP 5 has achieved a net return of nearly 30% in the technology and services sector, which is the focus of Fund 6. This commitment is expected to generate significant capital gains over the next decade, helping to grow the Common School Fund over time. Shifting back to the allocation table on page 30, the Common School Fund fixed income portfolio is detailed towards the top of the page. You will note that we are currently over target in the public market sectors of government and corporate bonds, but under target in private debt, including state trust fund loans and private debt funds. Our plan is to balance these exposures to the target levels over time, as we are able, through bond redemptions and selective bond sales. We expect that state trust fund loan balances will likely increase over the remainder of the year, and that the shift to private markets will accelerate from the reinvestment of bond redemptions if and when market interest rates retreat from current levels. As we move down to public equities, we're somewhat over target in both domestic and global ETF allocations. Last week, the investment committee approved a plan to reduce our ETF exposures to reach target levels through a series of steps over the next month. These sales will accomplish three goals. They'll reduce the Common School Fund public equity ETF exposures to the target level. They will slightly de-risk the portfolio during uncertain market conditions. And we'll also capture some of the outperformance that has been provided by global equities over the past 6 months. As you might recall, the domestic equities asset class also currently includes common stock in the Blackstone Secured Lending Fund, which has a ticker symbol of BXSL, that we received when a prior Blackstone private debt fund went public through an IPO in October of 2021. The investment committee keeps a close eye on this asset, which has climbed about 13% year to date. The investment committee will continue monitoring this investment to determine an appropriate time for any potential sale of those shares, along with the reinvestment of any proceeds. Looking down the page to alternative assets, we are closely to fully invested in real estate. Over the next few months, we anticipate closing on one additional commitment to both infrastructure and venture capital, bringing those asset classes closer to their target allocations. I also believe that additional commitments to the private debt asset class may benefit the portfolio over the long run. That's the end of my report this quarter. Thanks for your time, and I'll ask if there are any questions.
Rich, really appreciate your work and the work of all the committee. And I will open it up to commissioners for any questions, but it was very thorough. So thank you.
Thank you.
John or Josh, you have any questions for Rich?
No, that was a good presentation. Thanks.
None for me either.
Well, if you think of anything over the next period of time, just don't hesitate to give me a call. Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. And we do appreciate these updates.
You bet.
Moving on to the Executive Secretary's report, Tom.
The only thing I have to report is that I'm spending virtually every waking hour trying to convince Joint Finance to provide BCPL with the funding that we're asking for in our budget request. So the next meeting, I'll be able to report how we did on that.
Tom, is BCPL on Thursday?
Yes.
Any questions for Tom? And Tom, I know you've been doing a lot of work, and John, appreciate you participating in a handful of those meetings with Tom. That's great.
Yeah, happy to help.
Thank you.
All right. Then the last report is mine. I don't have really much to share at this particular moment. But I'm sure in 2 weeks that will change. So appreciate everyone. And is there any other new business that we should add for our next agenda? All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, John.
Aye, Josh.
Well, have a great week, everybody.
Take care, everybody.
See you in two. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.